that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, and they just disagree on how.
We're going to get across that wasteland, and we're going to do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
Blog Talk Radio.
Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Battle Red Radio. My name is Matt West, and tonight I'm joined by the biggest, fattest, and drunkest one of them all, BFD. Hey, dude, how's it going?
Hey, thanks for having me on tonight, Matt. I'll turn on my radio voice. I don't do it very often, but here we go. I'm looking forward to a great show tonight. We're going to have lots of special guest stars, and actually, no, we're not. Never mind. Go ahead. You take over.
I have to be better. So, did you know that it snows up in Canada?
It has to snow somewhere because it doesn't snow here. That makes no sense.
Yeah. So I'm sorry about last week, everyone who checked their iTunes or however you get the show and saw there was no episode. You know, sometimes when you want to backpack, you get permits, and then you get permits 6 months down the road, and they give you permits during week one. And then you go anyways, and then the place you're going to go catches on fire, and then you have a flight that's non-refundable. And so you go up to Canada instead. And you try to cross the mountain pass in the snow, and you can't find the trail, so you have to hike back down. And it was a good backcountry trip. I had a lot of fun, but it's really cold up there, and it snowed a lot, and now it's like 97 back here, and I went for a run and sweat and take a cold shower, and now I'm exhausted. But if you haven't, go up to Canada, go to Banff. It's very beautiful up there. Everybody's very nice, and it's like a cultural center of the world because really nobody there is even Canadian. It's like everybody from all over the world goes to that spot, so... it was cool, though. It was a good time.
Excellent. I'm so glad to hear it, Big Matt.
that's
one place I really want to go. I want to go to that part of Canada, the Banff area. I have a friend who's from there, and he has taunted me about it from years. Now he lives in Austin. He barely goes back, like once a year. He talks about how completely and utterly gorgeous it is, and I really want to make it up there.
Yeah, it's really cool because like, all the lakes are always glacial still. It's like the water is color that... Like, I haven't seen since I, like, took a bath when I was, like, 6 years old. It's just, like, super, like, clear and turquoise and stuff. And it's all pretty wild. And, like, the mountains aren't super tall either, because it's so far north, they're also covered in snow. But what wasn't wonderful, though, was watching and checking the score on the airplane and seeing the Texans lose to Tennessee Titans, lose to Mike Vrabel, lose to Gabbert, lose to an offensive off their two starting offensive tackles. Then landing and watching the condensed version, and just hysterical. So right now the Texans are 0-2. They lost New England. They lost to Tennessee, like I said. And you know, I'm bummed. You know, I'm disappointed. I thought this team would be playing better. And now they're entering a must-win game this Sunday against the New York Giants. So according to you, in your brain, BFD, what's been the biggest disappointment so far for this Texans 2018 season?
For me, it's easy, and that's the offensive scheme. I mean, we have seemed to regress back to Bill O'Brien. You know, preface this by saying at the beginning of the season, I actually was optimistic, right, that Bill O'Brien had learned something in 2017 when he had Deshaun Watson, this new toy. He gave him the opportunity to run almost like a college-style offense, but do things like get the ball out of his hands quickly, faking the jet sweeps, creating a lot of space, a lot of open space for Deshaun Watson to work with. That is utterly and completely disappeared. All of our worst nightmares have come true. Bill O'Brien thinks that Deshaun Watson is Tom Savage. And it's just absolutely disgusting to see how Deshaun Watson is literally being wasted right now because Bill O'Brien is dead set on making sure that Deshaun Watson is going to follow his trash offensive scheme that did nothing for 3.5 years, except for a couple of games with Deshaun Watson at quarterback last year. So it's beyond disappointing to me, Matt, that Bill O'Brien took something that was working so efficiently and effectively and well and turned it back into trash. And I can't tell you how much that drives me off the wall, Matt.
Yeah, and I'm doing the same thing as well, too. But I think one of the biggest problems with this offense so far this year is that they aren't using Deshaun Watson as a runner, but they're trying to do the same things to take advantage of him as a runner. So, like, in shotgun formations, for example, they're running, you know, quarterback reads, but they're handing the ball every time. They're running you know, the zone read with a jet sweep to run the option like they ran last year, but Watson's not keeping the ball at all. They're, you know, faking the jet sweep, but they don't have a player who can actually run it, and then try to run play action off of it, which allows the pressure to get there, you know, gives it an extra second and a half or so. And there's no biting at all in that jet sweep because they're not actually running the play to any success or running it at all, really. And then all of a sudden the pass rush there's immediately. And so they're not playing straight ahead, and they're disguising the fact that they're playing straight ahead with all these fakes and stuff that don't matter, provide any value at all to the offense. And so I think one thing that O'Brien has to do to make this offense better and improve it is if they're going to be doing the things that they did last year, if they're going to be acting like the things they're doing right now, they're going to have to use Deshaun Watson as a runner. I know that he suffered that ACL injury, and you want to make sure he doesn't get hit too many times, and you want to limit how often he runs because you'll let him get injured again. But that's one of the things that makes him so special as a player is his running ability, and this opened up the offense last year. And if you're not going to use him as a runner and run the same plays as last year, your offense is going to be stagnant because Deshaun Watson still has to grow as a pure passer out of the pocket. As far as reading defenses and the offensive line is not as good as it should be to run the same type of offense the same way. So, I mean, I understand what you're saying. I agree with the two completely. And I just think, like, for this offense to get better, for things to be like how they were last year at all whatsoever, Watson's going to have to run the football, and they're going to have to use him as a runner. I know there's injury concerns regarding that, but, you know, you're 0-2. You're going to have to score points, and that's the one thing they haven't done that they can do to kind of unlock things to get things looking how they looked last year.
Right. And then, you know, the other thing is if you go back, and we'll probably talk about this more, the one thing that I really keep beating the dead horse about, my daughter really hates when I say that, beating a dead horse because she loves horses and rides them, is that if you know your quarterback is taking too long to process the game, right? He's holding the ball too long, whether it's processing, whether he's looking for the wide open guys or whatever it is he's doing, why aren't you scheming to get the quarterback to get the ball out of his hands quicker? And you brought up, let's bring up two plays. DeAndre Hopkins slants, you brought that up, that it burned New England a couple of times and the Titans were sitting on it. You know what? There's more than one pass pattern than a slant. And that pass pattern is not a damn screen pass.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, is that really what we're going to do to get the ball out of his hands faster? Is we're going to only do slants and screens? So it's really infuriating that is the elite imagination, offensive imagination of Bill O'Brien coming into play here. Is that that's all we can do? That's what we're going to do to help, you know, Deshaun Watson get the ball out of his hands and throw a slant to DeAndre Hopkins and screen to anybody who's living? Matt, I don't get that either.
Yeah, and the screen passes, you know, going talking about the Titans game specifically that you mentioned, you know, Houston got the ball around the 40-yard line against Tennessee, and they had first down, second down. They ran two screen passes. I think they lost on both plays and had an incompletion on third down and punted instead. And I don't even know if I was trying to get the ball out quicker, but that was Bill O'Brien 2015-2016. You know, ever since he's been the head coach, conservative football, where he had the ball, the game was tied, and he was playing for a field goal there. He didn't want anything to go wrong. He was just going to play for that spot and try to hold on and try to, you know, make Blaine Gabbert do something. It didn't work, and they punted. And that was one of the reasons why they lost. You know, going back to, you know, Watson, something that you're talking about, you know, getting the ball quickly out of his hands, I think that's kind of one of the problems with this offense as well, too, is they waste a lot of routes. You know, you kind of watch the coach's film, and it's like Watson only has one read, maybe two reads. And there's like two or three guys running routes, but they're listless. Like there's no like effort at all to them. And Watson's only reading, you know, one side of the field. And you know, with Fuller being back last week, it really helped out a lot because they had somebody who can actually get open against quick, you know, get open quickly against pressure. But everybody else on the roster, aside from him and Hopkins, you know, the Titans can't. Ellington's fine, but he's not that great at it. But they're missing, you know, receivers who can get open quickly and win, you know, one-on-one battles immediately off the line of scrimmage. And O'Brien, as a play caller, he's not getting guys open. He's not creating open throws. He's not creating easy throws for Watson. And you have to do that when you're kind of limited at talent spots with, you know, Ellington the slot with the tight ends that they have available and not really having a fourth receiver on this team whatsoever. And that's entirely on him as well, too. And so I think, you know, regardless of passing offense specifically, I think they have to use Watson as a runner more. They need to have every route be utilized and also, you know, scheme to get guys open as well, too. And this offense shouldn't be 26 in point score. It's too talented. Watson was too good last year. I know we talked about touchdown rates before, but, like, they shouldn't regress this far, you know, back to where they are right now. And O'Brien, there's, like, you know, three easy things they can do to make this offense better immediately. And so far he really hasn't done anything at all as a play caller to help this offense out.
Now, and it just so much resembles, and you nailed it, it resembles 2014, 2015 Bill O'Brien's offense. And you don't have – that offense didn't work. Why is it going to work now? The only person who's ran that kind of offense and was successful is Tom Brady. That's because he's freaking Tom Brady. So it goes back to when we hired Bill O'Brien, he was supposed to be Bill O'Brien, offensive super genius. And instead, what we see from the Houston Texans offense is we see the old throw offense again, dry humping the table leg and not even able to finish because it just gets too tired, and it punts the ball at the 35 damn yard line. You know, if you're going to have a big leg guy like Kimi Fairbairn as your field goal kicker, and yes, I realize he missed short earlier in the day, but he does have the leg to make that. Look, your choices are really, you're either going to kick the field goal, miss it, you give it to him at the 42-ish, or you kick the punt, hope that you peg them back deep, but you're still talking about, you know, 30 yards, let's say. You know, for going Blaine Gabbert, sure, that's a lot of yards, but wouldn't you rather go for the three rather than just say, hey, here's 30 yards of field position? So I just, that conservative bent, especially on that back end of that series, and as we were watching the game, Matt and I making the comments about it, little Matt, that was the moment Texans lost that game.
Mm-hmm. And also, like, a 54-yard field goal is a really hard field goal to make, too. And, you know, missing that field goal by, like, 2 yards or so isn't anything to, like, lose confidence in, you know, Fairbairn's ability to make field goals as well, too. And so I think that part is kind of frustrating. The last thing I want to say about the passing offense and O'Brien's play calling, you know, regarding that and Watson, too, is I'm also frustrated that they're not throwing to Hopkins as much as they are. And they're also trying to scheme to get Hopkins open. Hopkins is like one of the few receivers in football where, like, you really don't have to do a lot to get him open. You leave him on the sideline by himself in isolation. Let him run his curls. Let him run his fades. Let him run his posts. You know, he can get open on by himself. And they were really afraid of Stephen Gilmore against New England for whatever reason. They didn't really take any shots downfield except for that one Watson threw in double covers that was intercepted in the end zone. But they're not letting him go out and play and just be better than other cornerbacks that they had before in the past. And then you watch that Jacksonville game last week, and, like, they're attacking Stephen Gilmore with, you know, Keelan Cole and Dede Westbrook, and it's Blake Bortles at quarterback. And the week before, you have Bill O'Brien and, you know, being afraid to do the same thing with Hopkins, who's a top three wide receiver against Gilmore as well, too. And so I think, like, just letting your guys go out and just be better than the opponent is something that O'Brien hasn't done a very good job at as well, too, this play calling this year.
Yeah, and what is – DeAndre Hopkins is not – you mentioned Will Fuller. Will Fuller is a guy who gets open. He creates the space, gets open. DeAndre Hopkins catches contested balls. That's what he does. Yes, he's good at getting open, but he's going to make the catches. He's going to beat the DB to the ball. You have to understand that as Deshaun Watson, as Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, and Watson's also really good at ball placement. Like, he can put the ball where only his guy can get it too, and they're not letting him do that as well either. On Twitter, we had a question from Lato, and he says, what's wrong with Watson? So, BFD, are you seeing anything specifically that's wrong with Deshaun Watson, his play, or are you chalking this mostly up to, you know, Bill O'Brien's, you know, failures as offensive coordinator and head coach?
I think it's a little bit of each. I mean, Watson has to take some of the blame for the fact that he is taking so long to get rid of the ball. That said, almost every you know, a successful passing play that's gotten the ball downfield. It seems like it's been a broken play. You look at the touchdown to Hopkins on Sunday, was a completely broken play. Watson holding on to the ball too long, Ben Roethlisberger-esque, you know, kind of running around, avoiding the sack, and getting the ball downfield. I think he had the ball for, 7 seconds on that play. So he can do that sort of thing, but you don't necessarily want him to. As a young quarterback, you want him to, well, be upright, which we'll talk about, but you also want him to push the ball downfield a lot more, and that's one thing he hasn't been doing either. He has not been pushing the ball with the same ferocity that he did in 2017, mm-hmm. where he was dead set on getting the ball downfield. This year, it seems more like there seems to be the hesitation there to do that, Matt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, two of his interceptions were pushing the ball downfield, and he's taking shots, which you want him to do. But the only thing I don't like, though, is both those shots came in, you know, like double and triple coverage.
And he had coverage on the
other sideline. You know, you had Gilmore's pick in week one. You had Dory Jackson's pick. And I know on Jackson's pick, you had Fuller and one-on-one coverage on the sideline. And so if you're going to take a shot deep, throw coverage, you know, don't throw in double coverage. And I think also the lack of deep passing far from Watson also has to do with the lack of, you know, the play action meaning anything. Last year, a lot of his passes downfield were created off play action by the, you know, the fakes of faking the zone read, faking the jet sweep and those sort of things. But now they don't mean anything. They're just empty gestures. And so they're not able to get those one-on-one matchups downfield as well too. And also, like, I think O'Brien can do a better job as well to, like, scheme to get Fuller running through two safeties. And then if they run with Fuller, then you have one-on-one coverage to Hopkins. And it's pretty easy to create matchups for those two guys specifically as well too. I think my biggest thing with Watson is what you're saying. He's holding the ball on too long. And also, I don't like how he's reacting to pressure too. I think he's pulling his eyes down the ball down too early as well. And even when the pass blocking isn't, like, you know, it's not going to be perfect every play, but even when it's good enough, he's pulling the ball down. He's looking to get outside the pocket. He's worried, you know, and that sort of thing too. And so I think even that's kind of the more troubling thing I've seen with this play specifically though, is that he looks really antsy. He doesn't look as calm as he did last year with pressure as well too. He's not putting the ball behind his back and chunking it, you know, 50 yards downfield for a touchdown. He's not the Watson we saw last year. I wasn't expecting that to happen because I thought last year was super unsustainable, but I didn't think Houston be ranked, you know, 26 in points scored up to this point in the season as well either.
Yeah. Give me a Mills play, you know, give me something aggressive that's going to stretch the ball downfield. And he's doing it some. The look at the dime he dropped to Will Fuller. I just think that needs to be more of a part of the offense. And also, you can get rid of the ball pretty quickly on something like that. So, you know, we're going to talk about the offensive line because we have to.
Mm-hmm.
But we can be more aggressive down the field and better, smarter aggressive down the field than we have been so far this year.
Yeah, and they have the players do it too, like with Watson and with Hopkins and Fuller. Like, there's really no excuses to not be better down the field so far this year as well. Also on Twitter, we had another question from this guy named Meegs. He said, you know, what's wrong with O'Brien? We already talked about that. But also BFD, is there anything he does right at all? So is there anything that you've seen O'Brien do right so far this year? Or is, you know, like, you're a little bit confident in this year just solely based off that 5-game sample size last year?
This is a great question. I love this question. Thank you. I don't see if I asked that one. Is that Lato too? Okay.
No, this is me.
Okay. Thank you, Meeks. I appreciate this question a lot because I want to look at it this way. The Houston Texans right now have lost their last 8 straight games. I want to just put that in context. Not even the Browns have lost their last 8 straight games. Not even the Jets. The Houston Texans lost the last 6 of the 2017 regular season and the first 2 this year, lost their last 8 straight games. So what is Bill O'Brien doing right? Well, if he's the one who cut Shane Leckler, great. If he's the one who got rid of Jay Prosh, great. Otherwise, I don't know how you look at Bill O'Brien's body of work and say, what is he doing well? Because, okay, I understand getting beat by the Patriots, but to me, being beaten by the BESFs when they're down their top 2 tackles, when Blaine Gabbert, real American, is their quarterback.
And wide receiver.
That is, right? That is unforgivable. That is an unforgivable coaching self-inflicted error. So do I think Bill O'Brien's done anything right this year? Not really, because the offense is on him, and we've talked about the offense. The run scheme looks better to some degree. I guess I can give him that. We are using more outside zone play, so I will give him that. And it's being reflected by the yardage we're gaining. So I will give him that. So there you go. There's your whatever. There's your Snickers bar of goodness for Bill O'Brien, Matt. Please take it.
The only thing I can really say is that the players like playing for him and like things are managed competently enough, you know? Like, I mean, they won games in the past, and that means something. I know they won games, like all these close games, and the team got the bare minimum of the talent they had and all sorts of things. It's frustrating. But I guess, like, it means something that, like, J.J. Watt likes playing for them, that, you know, J.J. Van Clay likes playing for them, that, you know, they've been able to, like, keep things together competently enough, even with all the, you know, inmate stuff going back last year. So, I mean, that's probably the best thing about him. But I think overall, like, this year when it comes to, like, being a – like, Ogeron, like, LSU, like, that's what he's great at. Like, O'Brien's been good enough at. When it comes to actually, like, scheming and getting the most out of his players, he's been, you know, bad at that. And I even think, like, you know, this year, like, I was optimistic for him based off last year's sample as well, too, and thought he deserved, you know, another shot for this year at minimum. I wouldn't have extended him all. I would just wait and see what happened this year. But I think my, like, least favorite thing about O'Brien is how, like, arrogant and he is during this entire run, and like how much smarter he comes off as everybody else, and how much like super genius he comes off of. Whenever like all he's done is got in, wasted J.J. Watt's prime, got on the bare minimum of this roster, held this team back in a lot of different ways, made terrible quarterback decisions, was part of the reason why the quarterback position was passed on down the road for so long, and he's won 9 games based off of a team that like he really didn't entirely built at all. And he's just been such a just a douche about it the entire time, to say as nicely as possible. And I think that's like, you know, aesthetically and like enjoying the game of football and enjoying, you know, the team I like. That was like my least favorite thing about O'Brien, even in addition to all the scheme stuff as well too.
Yeah, and the whole thing about he, you know, the players love to play for him type stuff. You know, I always like to go back to the story. I've said it here on the show before, but Reno Giacomini thinks Tom Cabell is like the best offensive line coach in the business. So that's all I need to know about when a player says they love a coach, is that the worst offensive lineman in the league said the worst offensive line coach in the league is the best. And that's all I need to know about that sort of crap.
Yeah. No, I can see that. And also, like, it's really not that hard, I think, to coach J.J. Watt and Clowney. You know what I mean? And those guys are going to be great pretty much no matter who the coach is as well, too. Let's talk about the offensive line now. We'll have a couple more of your questions we can get to a little bit later on. I'm super kind of bummed right now, you know, watching this offensive line. Like, I really liked watching Julian Davenport left tackle last year. I thought he could be, like, a, you know, competent starter at that position, especially if he got stronger. It looked like he did. He looked great this preseason. Martinez Rankin is my favorite offensive tackle I watched last year during the draft. And I was super stoked when they drafted him. I thought Kelemente would be, you know, good enough at guard. I know he has problems with his hands and problems, you know, getting second level. He can be in pass pro sometimes, but he was, you know, pretty good in Orleans. Fulton, I thought, had Pro Bowl caliber talent. And I thought Martin, you know, looked off worse than he was because he was playing next to Suofio and playing next to Jeff Allen. That being much between Kelemente and Fulton would do a lot for his career. And so far this year, like, it's been a bad offensive line. I think running the ball, they've been pretty good when they run straight forward, so they're not like faking a fake that they're never even going to hand off on, and they're running straight ahead when they're running, you know, pulling with Miller behind Fulton or running outside zone. They've looked good then, but it's like you'll see 3 good play side blocks and the backside won't do that well. That's kind of limiting the amount of big games they can get, but they've been competent enough, you know, in the run game. But the pass blocking, I think, has just been, you know, atrocious based off the expectations I had going into this year. So what do you think about this offensive line? What's wrong with them?
Well, I think the biggest thing that's wrong with them is that Davenport is new to that position. Rankin's a rookie. Kelemente is Young, and he was with the Saints last year, and Fulton was with the Chiefs. So you got one guy out of the offensive line who was with the Houston Texans last year. And this is something, you know, whoever has been listening to this podcast since we started in whatever, 2008 or 9 or whatever it is, that one of the consistent things we talked about back then was the offensive line was always so good because it was so cohesive because they've been together for so long. So you had, you know, I'm going a little bit better, a little bit later, but, you know, for a while there you had guys like, you had Dwayne Brown and you had Mike Brazel and you had Wade Smith, Pro Bowl guard, and you had Chris Myers and you had Eric Winston, and you had a lot of consistency along that offensive line. So these guys worked well together and had worked together for a long time. I would like to say that's all it is, but we're seeing, you know, Davenport and Rankin getting blown up one-on-one. So that, you know, kind of throws a little bit of that out of the water. But what we're not seeing is we're not, you know, they're not cohesive. So I think if you look at this team and say these guys have played together two NFL games, I think this is going to be, at the end of the year, a far better line than they were in 2017. Mm-hmm. But it's going to take them a year to get there, Matt. I don't know about you.
Yeah. No, and I agree with that. I think we'll be better as the year goes on. I think really where that's going to improve most is probably in the run game, especially run the outside zone. Like, it's hard to do. And then especially on the backside, like, the double teams are sloppy. They're not, like, understanding who's helping where and getting to the spots that they need to get with their head placement and how long they need to stand the first level before it gets to the second level. And there's too much penetration because of that. And also, like, I'm also super confused about the tackle spot thing. I've heard him told, you know, Rankin is left-handed and he feels more comfortable at left, and they gave Davenport spots at right all year long. I think kind of a fail-safe if Sean Henderson was terrible. That was kind of like their backup, was that they moved Davenport to Ryan, put Rankin at left. But, like, I mean, Davenport just doesn't look like – he doesn't look smooth at all, right? Like, he looks super clunky in his pass set. He's stopping, you know, his feet during it. He's missing his punch. And then Rankin hasn't been good at all left at all either. So I think even if Rankin feels more comfortable at left, I think the marginal benefit you get from Rankin playing left isn't worth what you're losing from playing Davenport at right as well, too. And I think overall, like, it's not even a cohesion thing. It's just like a skill thing where they're getting beat by simple edge rushes. And they're not, like, getting beat by, like, spectacular players either. Like, New England beat both of them up pretty good. I know that, you know, Harold Landry and Rackler are better than what New England has on at the edge rush position. But they're not even getting beat by moves at all. They're just being run on the outside and dipped under. And they're getting Watson like that, you know, not doing a lot at all whatsoever. And it's super frustrating to watch. And I think that would be better off with Davenport going to the left and Rankin playing right. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're going to keep them where they're at. But, you know, being so excited to watch these two guys play, it's just been kind of like just stomach churning, kind of awful. You know, for me, as somebody who really loves offensive line play, and I was super excited to watch these two guys play at the tackle positions this year too.
Yeah, I think, you know, the offensive line play has always kind of been – I've always liked line play in general more than the other positions, and that has been a kind of a downer that I expected a lot more. But also, I also, like said early on, the talent is so much better than it was last year. Look,
yeah.
Getting Giacomini off the field is just – I mean, how much of a gain is that? And Davenport and Rankin are going to have very solid, if not above-average, careers. But this is Davenport's, what, third, fourth start, and Rankin's a rookie. So these guys are young. They're going to have to learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. And I do think it's much better than last year. I mean, already it is. They didn't give up 10 sacks in a game. Kendall Lamb's on the field. There are 6 offensive tackles, Greg Manx, which is really good. I just thought it would be better. I thought it would be better kind of immediately too. And the other thing that's been kind of weird is that they've been struggling at picking up stunts on the inside too. Kelemente's not blocking the right guy here and there. And also, like, his hands haven't been very good in pass pro. He's been getting beat pretty often. And also, like, Fulton doesn't look as good as he looked in Kansas City last year as well either. And that's been, you know, frustrating too, because he was really good for him. And this kind of takes me to, I guess, a bigger discussion, because I was thinking about it yesterday, you know, in the shower with this offensive line specifically. And since Bill O'Brien's been the head coach, they haven't really added or made anybody better at offensive line. Brandon Brooks got better whenever he left. You know, Dwayne Brown was already kind of settled, but they could never even turn Xavier Suafio, who was a talented college player, into, you know, anything any good at all. And it was because of his hands specifically, and they could never teach him how to use his hands right to be a competent enough pass blocker or run blocker, even for that matter. Ben Jones got better in Tennessee. They really haven't like drafted anybody in like the fifth and sixth round, have them get better as well either. You know, Newton blew out his leg. Jeff Allen got worse here. Really, the only player that they drafted and had seen like having any success at all was Greg Manx, who took over at center and is now like a rotational guard. And so I think there's just like a lack of ability, either the offensive line coach specifically, or you know O'Brien or whatever. But this entire team since O'Brien's been the head coach has been really unable to develop offensive linemen and make offensive linemen better when they come to Houston. And I think that's part of what's going on here as well too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a valid question. Is the job of an offensive coordinator? Goodness, is to make his team better. Is there anybody that you can look at that has genuinely made strides under Bill O'Brien? You're talking about the offensive line. Let's talk about the entire offense. I mean, Deshaun Watson seems to be going backward. Lamar Miller was much better. Will Fuller was drafted by the Texans. So, I mean, who can you look to and really overall in that offense and say, hey, he has turned this X into a star? You can look at Gary Kubiak and say, hey, look, he went out and got Chris Myers, Mike Brazell, Eric Winston, he drafted, and these guys all became, and especially in Chris Myers' case, a far above average center, and the rest of them became above average at worst. So Is there anybody you can look at and say, hey, Bill O'Brien's turned them better on the offensive side, not only the line, the offensive side? And the answer is, I don't think so.
Josh. And but he has looked better this year, though. I will say that. But whenever Alfred Blue breaks an 8-yard run, it's because he's running forward and all the time make good blocks in front of him. It's not because, you know, of anything he does, but you give him a hole and he can run north-south. You know, he's been better at that. And even Kubiak in the offensive line, like Bram Brooks got better. Derek Newton went from a 6th pick to a second contract guy who was getting, you know, $7 million a year before Von Miller ruined his entire life. And so those are, you know, we're talking about here like 5 or 6 different offensive linemen that got better with Kubiak and that scheme, that style. And here in Houston with O'Brien, it's been the exact opposite. And this is like the strength of the team in 2015, whenever they went to the playoffs with Hoyer as well. It was the best part of the offense. And since then, it's become a general weakness. And, you know, it's been frustrating as somebody who really enjoys watching offensive line play to see what's happened with these guys who came in, were better before in the past and had potential and really haven't delivered or met those expectations at all whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have anything else you want to add offensively at all?
I really think, you know, we're down on the offensive line right now, but I just want to really, really stress is that if you look at the pure talent level, this offensive line is going to be far better 6 weeks from now than it is today. So if you want, you know, try to be optimistic from it. Yes, we're going to suck right now. Yes, they're still working together, figuring out how to work together type stuff. Just be optimistic. It's going to get much better.
Yeah, and whenever I write this film room, I'm going to write about the Texans offense. I'll make sure to include that in there because I do agree with that. It's just one of those things that, like, that's the worst, that's one of the biggest things I've learned is don't have expectations on anything because if you have expectations, you're going to be let down. And because I wanted immediate gratification, I've been supremely let down by the offensive line so far.
Yeah.
So I guess going to the defense has been better than the offense, but it's been okay. And if you say it's been anything better than mediocre, you're either wrong, which is fine, you know, or you're a liar, which isn't fine. So my first question about the defense, BFD, is the pass rush. I thought if it was healthy, we're looking at, you know, a top 10 at minimum pass rush, maybe a top 5 pass rush. And so far this year against Gabbert and then against Brady the week before, on the outside and the inside, they're not really getting a rush at all whatsoever. So what are you seeing with the pass rush right now?
I think the biggest problem right now is that, and it's really funny how Ron kind of was a step ahead of you and posted the Whitney Merciless missing milk carton thing, JPEG. And the thread. Merciless has just been AWOL. I mean, I don't know what else you can say about him. He's just not even out there, it seems like. And Clowney, you know, was hurt. on Sunday. So one thing I don't know, did he come out of the game? Was he in the game, started, and came out?
I think he played the entire game. I know that they had Scarlett come in here and there, and that was the only time I ever questioned what was up with Merciless. I saw Brent Scarlett playing. I was like, why the hell is he in this game at all?
I'm at Clowney.
Clowney didn't play at all.
Okay, so he was out from the beginning. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was on the road when all that was going on, so my apologies for not knowing that. But so Clowney missed yet another game. And so when you talk about the Texans' pass rush, is basically Clowney, Watt, Merciless, and at least we can say Ejiofor is in there now. He looked good in his limited snaps on Sunday. If you don't have Merciless and you don't have Clowney, that leaves it all up to J.J. Watt, and you can chip him, you can put two guys on him because almost nobody else on that defense is going to get to the quarterback. So that's what happened on Sunday. Watt looked really good against the Patriots, but Clowney and Merciless, not so much. So we don't have a whole lot of weapons, Matt, to get to the quarterback.
Yeah, and you know, in that New England game, Merciless didn't do anything, Clowney didn't do anything, and the pass rush was Watt getting close to Brady, and the Texans are never going to beat the Patriots, and J.J. Watt's never going to sack Tom Brady. Those are just kind of facts that we have to live with. But then last week, their pass rush was a sack from Justin Reed on a killer blitz, and I'll see him blitz more often. That was, awesome how fast he got off the line and really took down Gabbert. And then Ejiofor had a awesome inside-out move, which he had in college, which he had all preseason as well, too. But Watt couldn't get anything going in the pass rush, and they really got stifled in the center. And I know last year was partly, Gabbert and the Titans offense scheme to get the ball out super quickly without both their tackles and that sort of thing. But you'd still expect for, Watt to get something up the middle. Ben Jones and Josh Klein and Quinn Spain are all good players, but they're not talking about all pros here. We're not talking about rushing against Andrew Norwell or Brandon Brooks or Marshall Yander or type of guy like that. These are pretty good players, and I was expecting for them to get some interior rush, and they weren't even able to do that whatsoever at all, too. The thing I want to see moving forward is I would like to see Clowney play defensive end again. I think he was too good defensive end last year, moved outside. He's also closer to the quarterback in that way, and he's also has more of an effect on the run game and can chase from the backside easier. And I want to see Ejiofor just start outside linebacker and get your best seven players on the field as quickly as possible. And I think that'd be one thing they can do to make this team better as well. So you have Merciless, Ejiofor on the outside, Clowney defensive end, and then you're stop trying to make Christian Covington or Angel Blackson or Brand Dunn try to happen. Because fine rotational players, but you're not going to get that sort of impact play from either of those guys.
Yeah, and I completely agree. Doesn't it feel like we're not putting our best defensive player out there? Christian Covington is fine. Blackman's fine. All these guys are fine. But wouldn't you rather have Clowney and Ejiofor rather than Christian Covington and Clowney?
Yeah, for sure. And I also think Clowney's just a better defensive end outside linebacker. I think every single time they try to play him outside linebacker, that's more of like an ideal. It's more that you want to have, him play there to kind of counterbalance ball on the opposite side, edge strength to that side of the defense. But it just hasn't worked out as well as it works in a defensive end. And he was the best defensive end stopping the run last year. And he was, a top 10 pass rusher at that position. And now you're making him play this handset because it's what you, I guess, want. I don't know how to describe it. And Charlie, I just don't really understand that disconnect there, though. He's better defensive end, just leave him there.
Well, and there's a couple other things that go with that, right? If you leave him at linebacker, then you almost force him occasionally to go into coverage. Clowney coverage is just stupid. I mean, let him do what he does best, and that's beast on quarterback. So that's stupid, number one. And then I had something else to go with it. So, well, you're wasting his talent there, but again, Christian Covington, Jadeveon Clowney. These don't seem like really tough decisions from my perspective because you're not going to lose anything as far as him stopping the run, but you're going to gain a lot by what he can do to get to the quarterback. And then if Merciless isn't doing anything on the other side, you have to get somebody else who can get to the quarterback, and that answer is not Brendan Scarlett. Brendan Scarlett is not a good football player. I don't know how long it's going to take for people to discover that Brendan Scarlett is replacement level at best, Dylan Cole has looked decent at times this year, but I would far rather have EG04 out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think Clowney also like playing defensive in the run game too. I think one of the things that you add for that is his ability on the backside. So if you're playing outside linebacker in a 3-4 and you're on the backside of the play, you're just kind of sitting and keeping contained back there, making sure there's not a cutback or a reverse or a quarterback keeper coming that way. And then instead of he's playing defensive end, he's able to chase backside, make plays happen from the backside, and he's closer to the ball all the time too. But yeah, I mean, even Cole playing outside linebacker I think would be better. And I think the choice they're trying to make isn't really Clowney or Covington. It's Edgy Ofer Covington or Edgy Ofer instead of Brandon or, you know, Dylan Cole instead of Covington, that sort of thing. And I think even that, I mean, you look at it from like that perspective, it still is kind of a no-brainer answer that you'd rather have those guys on the field than somebody who's pretty okay, you know?
Yeah, and one more thing. I don't know. I've been kind of monitoring it this year. It's always been one of my pet peeves, but when we're in sub packages, it looks like J.J. Watt is still lining up outside rather than inside. And to me, once again, that's just kind of a waste.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so as well too. And I think also with like he looks like the same like skill wise and technique wise, but he's just not getting there. And I think that's where age and the injuries kind of happen. Where before he would get around the tackle really fast, plant, and then immediately find the quarterback of the ball carrier, make those plays in the backfield. And now this year I'm seeing a lot of diving and almost getting there and close to getting there. These are plays they used to make before that he's not making anymore. I think the best way to help him is to keep him inside as often as possible and make his path as short as possible to those players, because he can still fight double teams and get around these blocks, but he just doesn't have the closing speed that he used to have to actually get there and finish plays off.
Yeah.
So I guess going back to, I guess, the Titans game specifically, I think I know a lot has been said about like the run defense numbers. So for example, you know, the Texans gave less than 3 yards a carry and that sort of thing. Whenever they had to make plays against Tennessee, they really failed to. You saw they had the game tied and they gave up 6 points, or they were up by three. Or I don't know exactly how the math works out, but they gave up 2 field goals in the fourth quarter. And the reason why they gave 2 field goals were they failed to stop the run. I thought this run defense would be like completely impossible to run against. But the Titans were able to run the ball up the middle, you know, pretty well. They one, get the lead, and then two, kind of deal with that 5-minute drive. They gave Watts only a minute left and 0 timeouts to try to come back and tie it. So did you see anything Tennessee did specifically in this one to be able to run the ball up the middle? Are you, you know, concerned that about this run defense even at all?
So I went back and looked because I kind of did not remember it the same way you did. So the series was Deion Lewis had a 13-yard gain to the left, 1-yard gain by Lewis. Corey Davis, 13-yard pass. Derrick Henry, 8-yard gain. So they're at our 48 at that point. 1-yard gain for Derrick Henry. 1-yard gain for Blaine Gabbert. 3-yard gain for Deion Lewis. 5-yard penalty. Corey Davis for 18 yards. Derrick Henry for 2 yards. We committed a penalty. Derrick Henry for 2 yards. And then Reed shut down Deion Lewis on 4th down. Or to make it 4th down and kick the ball. So they got the ball down the field, but a lot of the damage was Deion Lewis's first run and 30-plus yards from Corey Davis. So they were able to do it, but I think they were much more successful through the air, especially, you know, we forced a fumble from Davis, right, that we didn't recover.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they were
successful.
I think so, yeah. It was amazing. And he came all the way back 20 yards down the field to make that play. So I do think it was more the passing and less the runs, because we pretty much shut them down during that series as well, except for Deion Lewis's first 13-yard run.
Mm-hmm. I guess I understand what you're saying. It's kind of one of those things where whenever you look at the numbers, it's different than how you remember it. I just thought that they moved the ball pretty well up the middle, and I think they did a pretty good job with their pulls and that same sort of meth mouth stuff where, even though it's no longer there, Malarkey's not there, I think they do a good job still with pulling and then cutting back and allowing the aggressiveness of defenders to come upfield and knock him away. I know they did a really good job with Watt by cutting him, and they did a good job of letting him come up the field and then pulling and kind of ear-holding him a little bit as well, too. Yeah, but I, and also you're talking about Corey Davis as well. With this pass defense, like, it's going to be up to the pass rush to be able to stop defenses. The cornerback play really isn't there. And Davis just ran like a lot of really simple crossing routes and slant routes to get open. And so I know we were super excited about Kareem Jackson moving to safety. He's having to play cornerback now because of the Kevin Johnson concussion. What did you think about him at cornerback this year? And do you already miss watching him play safety?
I already miss watching him play safety. That's all there is to it. It's Kareem Jackson. we're talking, he would have been one of the best safeties in the league. He was already looking great back there. Yeah, I had the Giants sad.
Yeah. I also love, man, I love watching Kareem Jackson tackle too. It's like my favorite, it was one of my favorite things about being a Texans fan. And do you see that? You remember that stiff up Corey Davis gave Jackson? That was one of the most like obscene things I've ever seen. I've never seen Jackson get just like thrown out of a car like that before.
I missed part of that question. I'm sorry.
I said, do you remember Corey Davis stiff arming Jackson and just completely tossing him to the ground? That was just a meme.
That was – somebody else did that over the weekend too, and I remember the replay that I did in my head was, oh, that was just like Kareem Jackson getting faced. Yeah, that was sad.
Yeah, I really miss Kareem Jackson playing safety. And it's one of those things that pretty much became a meme as a Texans fan. It's kind of like that, like, Lestar Jean looks great in preseason sort of thing, that Kareem Jackson should play safety. The difference is that this is something that should have happened probably like 3 years ago, and, like, we all saw it. We all knew it would be a good idea. And now that it finally happens, it's been taken away from us, which is just, like, the most – one of the best metaphors for life I think I've ever seen before.
Yeah. Yep.
Now, like, I know we talked a lot about this defense and the passer specifically and, you know, potentially putting Clowney back at defensive end. Do you see anything else that Crennel can do to make this defense better? Because it's been good. Like, you know, it's been, you know, mediocre, but I think there's potential for it to be a lot better. What do you think Crennel can do on his end to make the defense better?
I think what he could do is he could go down to Jacksonville and kidnap AJ Bouye or Jalen Ramsey and then, like, bring him back to Houston and make him go out and play for us. I think that'd be the first best thing he could do. What I'm not seeing this year is and I got to admit that the game on Sunday, I was at my dad's house. It was his birthday. And so I was a little bit distracted, not watching the game with my normal intensity. And I have not rewatched it because, Jesus, I really don't want to watch Blaine Gabbert play quarterback again. But what I'm not seeing is, do you remember those halcyon days back in 2016, Matt, when we were doing those A-gap blitzes with Bernardrick McKinney and he was being so effective on those blitzes? I'm not really seeing that. And so I would like to see a little bit more imagination from Romeo Crennel, Matt.
Yeah, that's one thing I think he can do as well, is like just be able to create more fresh blitzing. I know he doesn't want to blitz because of the stuff that you have behind him, but even, you know, lying merciless up over the center, blitzing McKinney, or, you know, or like using him in TE stunts as well. I think Cunningham could be a good blitzer as well too because of his closing speed. I think that's one thing that he can do better is be able to blitz. I think he's been good with the pass coverage calls. We're not seeing the same blown coverage as we saw last year. Mike Vrabel, he's not trying to play a lot of zone. He's having to play, you know, man and soft man depending on the matchups. I think he's done a good job in that way, making a do with what he has at cornerback play, because they haven't really gotten super burned, you know, by wide receivers. And we're talking about a team with one that had Blaine Gabbert, and two, the Patriots don't have a ton of wide receiver talent, but they still have gone by, you know, pretty well in that regard as well.
Hey, they got Cordarrelle Patterson. What else do they need?
Yeah, yeah. The last thing I want to say about defense is I don't like watching Tyrann Mathieu play football. And it's that same sort of like Kevin Johnson thing where he would wave his arms around. And it's the same Brandon Harris no fly zone thing where you give up a big play and or you knock the pass down and you're waving your arms around celebrating and there's a yellow flag there. Or you're jawing the defender's or the receiver's face and then you miss a tackle immediately the next play. Or you get, you know, get trucked and get pushed. And Mathieu does the exact same thing where he's constantly jawing, constantly doing this and that, and then misses tackles. The only play he's made was based off of a tip pass at the line of scrimmage that kind of fell to him whenever he was beat by the running back on that play. Anyways, and I really just don't – like, I really have enjoyed watching Mathieu on this team. I don't like him on the internet as well, too. Like, I get something out of them on Twitter. I get like a prayers up or bless up or I love adversity sort of tweet from him. And it's just like the lamest thing ever. And it's so empty. And it's like the Texans run fakes this year. That's how I feel about Tyrann Mathieu.
Yeah, I for me, the jury is still out on Mathieu. He looked very good the first game. He did not look so great last game, but he didn't look bad. I think there's going to be a point in time where his lack of long speed is going to get really exposed, and it's going to make us all very sad. But look, he started out well. He started out better than he played in all of 2017 and definitely all of 2016. So reasons to be optimistic, but again, I go back to there's a reason that the dude – got a one-year contract from us and could not find something better in the open market. So, there you go.
Yeah. And, I think he's played pretty fine. I was just, like, that Taewon tackle was, you know, embarrassing on his end. But I don't think he's played bad. I don't watch him play. It's more of, like, an aesthetic, like, intrinsic. Like, how much enjoyment do I get by watching this guy play football? And it's been pretty much, like, absolutely zero. I just don't. It's like the type of, like, machismo that I absolutely, you know, hate that he like epitomizes, you know.
Awesome. I love it.
All right. So I got two, I guess, kind of legacy questions here now. I read a blog post by Sean Pendergrass, who, if you don't know, is a Houston sports talk radio thing, who sometimes blogs at House of Houston. And he named this the worst loss of the Bill O'Brien era. So, BFD, do you think Houston losing to Blaine Gabbert or Mike Vrabel is the worst loss of the O'Brien era, or is there something else that's a bigger skin mark in your eyes?
I tell you what, it's up there. It's way up there as far as that goes. I like Sean Pendergrass, so I will respectfully disagree. And I will say it was the almost back-to-back games, getting pantsed by the Atlanta Falcons and Miami Dolphins, that we were blown out of the game by the first quarter. Those two still really stand out to me.
Mm-hmm.
We should have won on Sunday. And Bill O'Brien did a terrible job as a head coach, and I'm beating that dead horse once again. But the games against the Falcons and the Dolphins in, was that 2015? Where
yeah,
we were 15. Blown away. Yeah, blown away, never had a chance. That was flat. That was embarrassing as well. And to me, that's a little bit worse.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Dolphins one was worse because that Dolphins team was, one, bad, and I can see his face. What was his name? Dan? Who was their head coach that just came in that first game?
Oh, God.
He was their tight ends coach.
The tight ends coach, yeah.
Yeah. And so he came in, it was his first game, and Ryan Tannehill did the Michael Jordan shrug in that game. And they lost, I think it was like 41-7. And the other thing about that game, too, that was so disgusting was rather than just like sit his starters and call it, O'Brien kept trying to score points to make the loss look worse, look better than it actually was. And it ended with Arian Foster tearing his Achilles and ending his entire career in a game that meant absolutely nothing as well, too. And so that one, the Dolphins one always stands out most to me. That one was just like so embarrassing and so like ruthless.
Yeah, I will never forget. I mean, that's part of it. I still have a grudge about that game and Arian Foster. I really do. I'm still really pissed off about that. It was stupid for him to be out there on the wet field in the fourth quarter, down 34 points. Why was he out there?
And also the same thing happened in that Falcons game as well, too, where Cecil Shorts took a concussion on a slant route into the end zone in the exact same situation where Houston scored like 21 points after being down 35-0. Make it like a 2-touchdown game when it was an absolute, you know, teeth kicker. Yeah, I was also – now, the other game that always comes to mind, too, when it comes to complete embarrassments, was the divisional round against New England.
When
Bouye got that pick, when they gave up the kickoff return touchdown, when he made a field goal at the 20-yard line, and Houston never got closer than that for the rest of the game. And just, like, how, like, limp, you know, the coaching decisions he made. And also, like, if Matt Moore was the quarterback for Houston that year, they probably would have won that game. That's how good a defensive performance they had. And it all kind of, like, broke right for Houston to finally upset New England because of the quarterback and those sort of, like, you know, super conservative playing out losing the Sims on the road. That one really hurts as well, too, because I think that's the only game Houston played they could have actually beat New England since, you know, they actually beat them in 2009.
Well, okay, if we're going to play that game, then I think the most humiliating loss was the playoff game against the Chiefs.
Yeah, that was the most humiliating. Yeah. That one was kind of beautiful, though, because it was just like the culmination of all those dumb quarterback decisions and O'Brien thinking he could win with no matter who was that quarterback.
Yeah, I watched that game with no safeties needed, and we were in a restaurant. And we were just – there was a couple other tables of Texans fans, and he and I were laughing the entire game. And all the other Texans fans are, like, looking at us going, like, we're insane. It's like, no, we expected this. We're going to have a good time with it. And so it was just, it was a comical – it was a hilarious game on every respect. And fortunately, the other Texans fans there, you know, started to enjoy it in that schadenfreude sense as well.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think I've ever seen – or like I haven't been mad about a Texans loss since they lost to New England Monday Night Football when Dante Stallworth caught that, like, 75-yard touchdown pass. Like, ever since then, I just, like – I find humor and beauty in the darkness, and it's always pretty funny. My next legacy question for you, and then we'll talk about this Giants game briefly. On the fake punt touchdown, was that the worst play of the Bill O'Brien era?
The only other one that comes to mind that was so embarrassing, well, the Jarvis Landry touchdown against the Miami Dolphins in 2015 also kind of jumps out because that was just pathetic on every level. There was like, what, 15 missed tackles, and not even close missed tackles on that play.
Yeah.
The only other one that stands out is the Minnesota Vikings punt return when Shane Leckler kicked to George Shirelles, and like there was nobody close to him. There was nobody within 20 yards of him the entire return because Leckler kicked to the wrong side and nobody else was even close, and Shirelles made it easy. So I think it's up there with those two, but that is so egregious that you have to give it first place.
Yeah.
The one on Sunday.
Yeah, and the other thing I remember about that punch, I think it's a set. Was they had Jay Prosh as the gunner on that play as well.
Gunner.
And, you know, like, if you want to do something really dumb, like, that's not covering the gunner. The only thing as dumb as that is putting Jay Prosh as a gunner.
You got to put that 5.3 speed as the gunner. Oh my God, so stupid.
Yeah. It's weird because, like, I can pick out really dumb games, but sitting here now, trying to think of really dumb plays. It's a little bit, you know, more difficult, but there's just been so much fun the last 4 years or so. And this is year five we watched Giants play, and it's kind of like the anti-Kubiak, I guess, in a way.
Yeah, you know, Kubiak had his issues. He was conservative as well. You're going to get the 3rd and 10 draw. But he did such a better job getting his players in a position to succeed, and Bill O'Brien is just like, I'm going to stick to my plan. I don't care if I've got this round hole. I'm going to take this octagonal peg, and I'm going to somehow shove it in there, and I just don't get it.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm done.
The biggest difference, briefly, is that with Kubiak, the problem with those teams is they lost a bunch of close games, and they had a terrible defense, and he didn't coach the defense. And they added Phillips, and they had Watt, and the defense got better. And then they weren't even playing close games because they were just, you know, kicking teams in the head. And O'Brien is the opposite. The problem is the offense, which can, and that his record is inflated by beating bad teams and winning a lot of close games. Now that he's not winning close games, the division's better. We're seeing seasons like what's happening right now. And kind of probably last year, like, even when Watson was healthy, they were still only a 5-year team with him starting. And who knows what would have happened now. Everybody got injured too. But I think that's the difference. It's like with Kubiak, there was potential. And with O'Brien, it always kind of feels like you're maxing out the team based off what he can get out of them as a head coach.
Right. Yep. Yeah. We talked about this kind of ad nauseum on the show, but there is one coach who is good at his job, and there's one coach who just flat out is not.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that's I know this is kind of happens sometimes throughout the year where Houston's really bad. And we kind of have these, you know, long soapbox discussions talking about why everything's bad. And, like, there's still some good things. You know, Will Fuller was really good. Watching them gang tackle Derek Henry was a lot of fun. And those are things. And we'll have more enjoyable stuff as, you know, the year goes on and team plays better. But this really isn't that time. And hopefully things come together really quickly. because this week they played the New York Giants. And both teams right now are 0-2. If you go back to the 16-game schedule, teams that start off 0-2 make the playoffs only 11.1% of the time. Teams that start off 0-3 make the playoffs only 3.3% of the time. And all four of those teams all finished 9-7 as well. So this is a must-win game for both these teams if they want to make the playoffs. So my next question for you is pretty simple. Do you think Eli Manning should retire?
I love this question. When I saw this question, you know, of course, Matt, I like to always say that Matt does a great job prepping us for the show, and he's got these great questions. And should Eli Manning retire? Only if he wants to live. That offensive line has not served him well in a very, very long time. And I don't know. I frankly don't know how he kind of does it year after year after year, because he takes a lot of hits. He gets touched a lot. Bad touching. Mm-hmm. Very bad touching. I just wanted to check real quickly. The Giants are dead last in run blocking and dead last in pass pro this year. And the last team they played with the Dallas Cowboys, and the Dallas Cowboys do not have the best defense that I've ever seen. So if that gives you some perspective about how bad that offensive line is, they are like, they make the Texans look like they all belong in Canton. So yeah, if he wants to live, yes. But I mean, what are your other choices going to be, you know, at this point in time? So he's got to go out there. He's got to play. He's got a game. There you go.
Yeah.
I got nothing more.
Yeah, and I also think part of that's like Pat Schumer too, as the offensive coordinator, is that he's going to run, you know, deeper dropbacks and those sorts of things. We have Eric Flowers at right tackle. You move him to right tackle doesn't really matter when a player just doesn't have the mobility to play offensive tackle in the NFL. You have Nate Solder, who's been caught, I think, with three holding penalties, who is mediocre, wasn't worth the contract he got, and doesn't extinguish blocks at all. And so whenever you have these longer dropbacks, like Nate Solder can't block long enough and never ends a block immediately to be able to do that. And on the interior, like Hernandez has talent as a guard, but he just is missing blitzes, like super easy decisions. And they're giving up a lot of leakage from that. And the Cowboys in that Sunday Night Football game, I can't remember how many times they sacked Eli, but they blitzed really well. And they had a lot of free and open rushers in that game. And so you know, with Manning in this situation, with these deep dropbacks and bad offensive line, I feel bad for him watching him play. I think it's a terrible, you know, mesh of scheme and then fit and talent. And it's kind of funny, too, because they had a similar offensive situation last year in Minnesota, where you have, you know, an offensive line is worse in New York, but I think the skill players are comparable. And the difference is Keenum can move a little bit. Manning can't move at all. And he's just been getting, you know, shellacked out there. And it's sad. Like, I feel bad for Eli Manning with his face all scrunched up and having no idea what's going on. And it looks like he's in the trench somewhere.
Yeah, and John Halapaya, the center, is not good. And Patrick Omema, I think that's how you pronounce his name, is one of the worst guards in the league. I mean, there's nothing that you look at on that offensive line and say, hey, these are above-average guys. Every one of them is bad, except for Hernandez has the skills, but still learning. So...
yeah,
it's ugly. And the number two quarterback, by the way, is one of the guys who I think was sorely underrated. I'm sorry, coming out of the draft is Kyle Aletta. I think the guy's a legit pro style quarterback who should be given a shot at some point this season over Eli Manning. He's no Nathan Peterman, Webb Davis. That's who they had last year. Remember, Webb Davis went in, started that game, and that's when the coach lost their job. So Aletta actually.
They benched him for Geno Smith, and that's in his streak. And then they fired McAdoo after that.
So there you go. So he's no Webb Davis, but Lauletta should be able to go out, and he's got arm talent. I think he should be given a shot at some point this season.
Yeah,
there's no reason to run Eli Manning out.
Yeah, and I know Lauletta had a good preseason as well too, even though that isn't meaningful. Yeah, and so that game specifically, Houston's pass rush needs to be better. If it's not better, Beckham's going to get open. Sterling Shepard's going to get open. Evan Ingram are going to get open. They're going to have to get to Manning. I want to see Crennel blitz a lot. I want to see Matthew blitz. I want to see Reed blitz. I want to see Kareem Jackson blitz. I want to see a lot of defensive blitzes. And also, like, Clowney and Merciless have to have a great game against these tackles. This is an optimal opportunity. Watt finally needs to get sacked. I think this is an opportunity. for that as well too. And like if the pass rush is bad or like not even like if they don't have 4 or 5 sacks this game, I'm going to be super concerned for the defensive side for the rest of the year too, because this is the type of game where like, they really need to come out and get after the passer. And if they don't, like I'll be worried, you know, for the rest of the year.
Well, this is the game. So we've seen what the Patriots did to us, what the Titans did to us, which was basically we're not going to really let the Texans pass rush get to the quarterback and create that havoc, right? We're going to get the ball out quickly. We're going to put the pressure on the cornerbacks who shouldn't be playing cornerback anymore. We're going to put the pressure on them. We're going to get the ball out quickly with Beckham, with Shepard, with Ingram. You can do those things with them. So if they can adjust that offense to get the ball out of Eli Manning's hands quickly to negate our pass rush, it could be a really big battle. I just don't think that adjustment's going to happen because that's not what he does.
Yeah, I just don't think it's what the Giants' offensive scheme is as well, too. Like, I know they got the ball out quickly to Beckham a bunch and Jackson against the Jags, and run a lot of crossing routes and stuff, but I think that's kind of the one thing they can do if they're going to try to get the ball out quickly. But overall, they're more of a deeper passing game. And then their passing offense has been a lot of their quick passes to Beckham, or it's a Manning holds on the ball, can't find anybody open, and dumps it off to Saquon Barkley. At one point in that game against the Cowboys, Barkley had 32 receiving yards and 8 catches. And so it's just like, the Manning doesn't find somebody in 4 seconds. He just throws off him. So what have you thought about Barkley so far watching him play these first two games?
And just saying, what is I don't know if it's not necessarily his favorite. What is Beckham's favorite route? Slant.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting. Saquon Barkley, I have said for years there is no way I would take a running back in the first round. I think Saquon Barkley broke that part of me. I think he is so good. He is so difficult to bring down. Multiple tacklers you need. He can run routes. He can pick up the blitz. He's a fantastic runner. And he's, like, fast as all hell. He is probably my favorite running back to come out of college since LT. So he's really a lot of fun. I hate it. I did not like Adrian Peterson. Adrian Peterson to me was just kind of a running back, and the guy didn't catch the ball in the backfield until this year.
Yeah. What you mean? Yeah, I think the key with Washington Barkley is he always makes the first tackle or miss. Like, it's absurd. It doesn't matter where he catches the ball, where he's at. He makes that first guy miss. The key for Houston this game is going to be making sure you make that second tackle. Because if you don't make that second tackle, he's going to break it wide. He's going to run for 40 yards. He's going to run for 60 yards. Jacksonville did a good job containing him. And the one time they did when he broke that 65-yard touchdown run was because he broke the second tackle. And so that's, I think, one of the big keys for Houston's defense in this game, too, is you're not going to be able to tackle Barkley every time. You're going to miss him. But you have to make sure that the second guy brings him down or you swarm at the second level. Because if you don't, that's whenever you're going to give up the big plays. And you can't give up the big plays, but you can't fall behind because we'll kind of see more of a game like we saw with Tennessee the week before as well, too.
Yeah. And the one thing about Barkley that I really enjoy, it's when he was playing the bowl last year at Penn State, he did not have to play that bowl game. It was kind of a meaningless bowl game, and the dude played. And that, to me, is just kind of the measure of a man. So he's just so much fun to watch. I just, yes, I'm totally man-crushing. I get it. I get it. So I'm there.
So on the Giants' defense, they're super weird because they finished number 2 in DVA. In 2016, they lost that playoff game to Green Bay. Last year, they completely fell off. Probably because of injuries. I think probably because of regression as well, too, and the whole plexiglass sort of thing. And now this year, you know, they gave up 20 points to Jacksonville. They gave up a big touchdown to Dallas, and they gave up, I think, 23 to Dallas as well, too. What do you think Houston can do to attack the Giants defense specifically?
Well, what the Giants don't think they're going to be able to do well this year is get to the quarterback. You have Harrison, Snacks Harrison. Everybody loves to call him Snacks, so I'll do it too. And you have Dalvin Tomlinson, both guys who are really, really great at stopping the run. But they're both interior guys. Alec Ogletree is a fast outside linebacker. I don't think Vernon plays this week.
Yeah.
So you have Janoris Jenkins on one side as a cornerback. You have Eli Apple. You don't. You have some decent talent in the secondary. I think you mentioned it in the write-up you did. You go after those weak linebackers. You go after the weak edge guys. And I think if there's ever a day that you'd like to really see the Texans attack the edge with Lamar Miller and his speed, is you see it on Sundays as they really get the ball outside. Got to run away from Harrison. It's not like he's J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt, you kind of want to run the ball at him to negate him. Harrison, Tomlinson, they don't have that kind of lateral speed. Run the ball away from them. Get the ball away from them. Mm-hmm. Make sure you get Ogletree tagged, and I think you can do some damage. So it's from that perspective, I hope that's how we match up against you, Matt.
Yeah, I agree too. I think Watson can have a huge game on the ground against the Giants. When you talk about on the edge, you know, zone read, that's a perfect play. Get somebody on the edge. I think they can do that a lot. Dak Prescott had a great game on the ground against the Giants. Blake Bortles had a great game running the ball against the Giants too. And then whenever you throw in the outside zone plays, like you mentioned, Lamar Miller, I think some zone reads as well too, Lamar Miller. I think that's the way they have to attack the Giants defense in the run game. Just try to run over the tackles, run over the edges. Elliott had a really good game as well, too, running the ball over the tackles compared to running up the middle as well. And the other thing, too, about the Giants is, you know, Janoris Jenkins is their best cornerback, but he's a really boomer bust cornerback as well, too. Tavon Austin beat him for, you know, a 70-yard touchdown just by beating him off the line of scrimmage. Whenever I saw that play, I just imagined Will Fuller doing the same thing, too. So I think in the passing game, they can take shots deep down the sideline whenever they have one-on-one coverage, and they need to whenever those opportunities come as well. I think it's also a great game for Hopkins whenever he's matched against Jenkins just because of his size and Watson's ball placement. So I hope that the conservative quick passing kind of goes away. I hope it's a lot more like running to set up the pass in a way, and then they take those shots to go deep down the field, down the sidelines, whenever those are available as well too. But I really think the key for Houston's offense, though, to consistently pick up first downs, it's just by making sure to run at the tackles and outside of that.
Yeah. If you can get – I mean, Landon Collins really might be the best cover guy that they have, their safety. Mm-hmm. And so if you can get him down, get him sneaking down, get that run going with Lamar Miller, you can hit Will Fuller deep. That it seems like it's kind of the perfect game plan for that. That's what I would do. Suck him in, throw him out.
Yeah. And also, like, just throw away from double coverage to Deshaun Watson. That's a good idea.
Please.
Yeah. So who do you have winning on Sunday? What's your prediction?
I do have the Texans winning. I have them winning 27-13. I think that this is a game that's got the potential to be very lopsided, kind of like a regression to the mean kind of game. So it's the sort of thing that could go 37-3, and I wouldn't be surprised. This Texans offense is better than they have shown. The Texans defense is better than they've shown. And the Giants have a lot of holes, and this is not a good matchup for them against us. So I'm going to go 27-13, but it could be ugly.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a closer game. I'm going to Houston 23-20. I'm not like there to expect a blowout at all, though. And I mean, I love pass rush is great. If Houston's pass rush is great, I think they'll win this game, you know, pretty well. But that's really kind of be the key there. The main reason I'm also saying 23-20 is I think these teams have talent, but they're just lacking in certain areas, whether it's coaching or offensive line, the Giants case. And then also, like, there's always a chance for Beckham just having an extreme game against Jonathan Joseph and Kareem Jackson and, you know, Aaron Colvin as well.
Yeah, and that's the most terrifying thing about this matchup, isn't it, is that Odell Beckham against our entire secondary is, or Ingram even. It's pretty terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah, the skill players they have. And also it's at home too, which I think is going to be, you know, helpful for Houston as well. So lastly, before we finish the show, we had some listener questions from our one and only favorite Greek road tripper, Peru Texan. So the first one I have here, BFD, is which Texans player would most resemble a character from the popular video game Super Mario Kart?
I know what you're doing, UT. I know what you're doing. I'm not freaking answering this question.
I really wish somebody on the team had like a really good mustache to make this a lot easier. I I think J.J. Watt looks kind of like Toad. It's completely erasing is why I'm saying that. But other than that, I would need more time to think about it. Maybe like a... I don't know. I don't know enough about Mario Kart because I could say, like, who's the most mediocre one of a bunch, and I could just say, like, yeah, that's kind of like Nick Martin, but I don't play video games anymore.
I know what you're doing, UT. Stop.
The next question I have here is from UT as well, and he said, which material would be best to use to construct a statue of Bill O'Brien's chin dimple? I'm thinking alabaster, while others would mass start saying Italian bronze. What are your thoughts? Relatedly, is Bill O'Brien the platonic ideal of a head coach, or just the absolutely greatest head coach of our generation?
So I'm going to go with, what's that called? Hold on, I have to Google for a moment. There we go. I'm going to go with Pills of Viagra. Is how they of what should be used to construct that statue of Bill O'Brien, and he is the platonic ideal of a head coach, meaning that, and I'm going to read too much into this, meaning that I wanted to just be his friend, and I actually want him to be a head coach.
I like that. That's nice. I would say Clay. You can make like a pretty good pinch pot, I think, to resemble Bill O'Brien's chin dimple would be the way I would do it. Just a nice little pinch pot, throw that thing in the kiln, you know, paint it orange, I don't know. And that'd be good. And it can be very, like, it's very, like, avant-garde as well, too. And you can put it, like, in the MoMA or one of those postmodern art pieces that are just, you know, really stupid. And his last question was involving BattleBots. He said, which BattleBots is Sean Watson most like? And I don't know anything about BattleBots, do you?
Oh, God, it's been too many years. I know they're on again, but, man, I haven't watched that stuff since I was in Colorado in 1997, UT.
Back when it was on Comedy Central as well, too.
Really?
Yeah, BattleBots used to be on Comedy Central.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Stuff. All right, well, that's all we have for tonight. Thank you, everybody, for listening live. Thank you for being on tonight, BD. It was fun. It was fun to talk football with you as well, too. I'm slowly caught up on – I'm caught up on the Texans. I have to catch up on the rest of the league. I'll probably this weekend and just, like, hunker down and watch a bunch of condensed games. But until then, you know, not entirely there. But next week, hopefully, I can write that 10th that I like article and be entirely all in on football and stop thinking about, you know, God and the snow and the mountains and just leaving this entire postmodern, you know, filth of a world behind. But until then, we'll be on next week live at 7 p.m. Central. And my name is Matt Weston, and thank you for listening to Bell Red Radio. And thank you for being on tonight, BFD.
Hey, it's a pleasure. This was fun. Thank you.
Hell yeah.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seems Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.